an interesting point. In text 23, it says that when Brahma came out of the lotus, his mind turned to creating under the impulse of previous impressions. So certainly for, you know, someone who has come to the position of Brahma from being within material life and somehow, you know, they get elevated to being Lord Brahma, we can understand how that would apply. In the case of a living entity who's just entered the material world, then the thing is, when the living entity enters the material world, they have this rajasic spirit. You know, first of all, their minds are covered by false ego. That's the first thing. But then, once they're given false ego, the next thing which arises is the rajasic principle that here I am, you know, me. I'm now on my own. So what am I going to do? I'm going to enjoy. So that rajasic type of spirit is, you know, like this, the mundane seminal principle, the desire to create, to enjoy, to expand. And, you know, I don't know why one living entity might, as first birth, be Lord Brahma, but another might be Indra, or another might be Vayu, or Agni, you know, and not Brahma. Because Brahma, I mean, they all have that rajasic principle is acting on all of them, all of those high demigods. But Brahma more particularly. Anyway, the thing is that they all have that. On entering the material world, they have that. And then Hiranyagarbha kind of solidifies it in, you know, particularly with those who are Lord Brahma, by actually, you know, by giving, empowering with a little bit of this specific mundane seminal principle, which is actually something imparted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which will then make, you know, that the person who's taken birth as Lord Brahma properly qualified to be a Lord Brahma, actually being empowered by Hiranyagarbha. Someone else had their hand up, was it? Oh, was it you? Okay. The question is that while the living entities are still in the stem, is the rest of the universe empty? The answer is that it's empty of living entities, but it has all the ingredients for the material creation there. Yeah. All the ingredients are there, and Lord Brahma is just getting ready to manipulate the ingredients, make the planets, and then he can bring out the living entities, populate the planets, like that. Yeah. Sitaram Lakshman. As I think again, who is speaking verses 1 to 28? Yeah. Now, from my understanding, I should say, it's Lord Brahma. It is not unusual in Vedic literature that the speaker speaks about himself as in the third person. An example, the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nemat Saranam Satam. Then Vyasadeva is speaking, but he's speaking about himself. Yes, he's speaking about himself. Yeah. So according to my understanding, Brahma has spoken all these verses so far. I know for a definite fact, the first verse is definitely attributed to him by Srila Prabhupada. There's no doubt about that at all. That is definitely attributed to Brahma. And we don't come across any statement that I've seen, which refers to the other verses as if they're being spoken by someone else. So that's my assumption. Okay. So tomorrow, and before you go, you can come and take your test paper. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're going on to the Govindam prayers, beginning with text 29. And today we will read through texts 29, 30, and 31. They are forming a type of section of their own. They're discussing Krishna's abode, Krishna's beauty, and Krishna's pastimes, particularly. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta explains in the purport of text 31. So let us read responsively text 29. Chintamani prakara sadma sukalpa vriksha. Laksha vriteshu surabhira bipalayantam. Lakshmi sahasra shata sambrahma sevyamanam. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desire, in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of purpose trees, always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. I'll just read through these, all three of these verses, and this is just feeding back a little here. These speakers need to be turned down slightly. Okay, so I'll read text 30. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who's adept in playing on his flute, with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head bedecked with peacock's feather, with a figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. And text 31. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers, beautified with the moon locket, whose two hands are adorned with the flute and jeweled ornaments, who always revels in pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shamsunda is eternally manifest. So here in the purport of text 31, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, in the shloka beginning with Chintamani Prakara, the transcendental region and the spiritual names of Govinda. In the shloka beginning with Venum Quanantam, the eternal beautiful form of Govinda. And in this shloka, the amorous pastimes of Govinda, the embodiment of his 64 excellences, have been described. So we are saying that these three verses can basically go together as a little group. We'll see that it is more or less structured like that. Next, there's a group of four verses, 32 to 35. Then 36, 37, 38, they form a natural little group. So for the time being, though, let us discuss a bit about these three verses. These are very famous verses. We've all heard them many times. You may recall that when we were discussing, I think it was verse 3, where there was the discussion about the different, those two different levels of advancement. One level in which you meditate on the mantra, and the mantra embodies a pastime. And gradually through that meditation, you enter, you realize the pastime. And when you realize the pastime, you enter into it, and you become part of it. But when you become part of it, then your reality is not limited just to that one situation, which is described in that one mantra. When you enter into it, then your reality, you are actually there in Goloka Vrindavan or Gokula Vrindavan, and in those places, in that place, Goloka or Gokula, in that place, then there are so many pastimes. The description given by Jiva Goswami is that when you meditate on one of the mantras, which is focusing on one of the pastimes, then that pastime, that mantra and the pastime it embodies, is like a lake. But of course, every lake, generally at least, you don't find lakes just sitting on their own. They have rivers flowing into them on one end and flowing out of them at the other end, and going on into other lakes, and then flowing on into other lakes. So there's usually like this whole series. So Jiva Goswami says that when you focus on one of these mantras, it's like you really get into one of these lakes, transcendental lakes. And then as you advance more and more, and you realize it and you enter it, then there you are in your lake, but the lake is moving because the river is moving through it. So then you get swept on by the river into the next lake, and then the next, and then your whole life, this is the Swarasiki stage, your whole life becomes just a whole sequence of going from one lake to another, from one pastime to another, one situation with Krishna to another, and again and again, and it's very amazing. And as these pastimes unfold, and you go from one to the other, and each one has its own particular characteristics, and you are flowing from one to the other, going with the flow, then all the different characteristics which there are in all the different pastimes which you are experiencing, they all mix with each other. The different characteristics are called the different bhavas, the different particular types of ecstasies which predominate in the particular pastimes. So when one is going from one pastime to another, and one is experiencing that all these different characteristics, all these different bhavas or ecstasies are mixing with each other, then the mixing is called rasa. The mixing of the different ecstasies is called rasa. Anyway, at this point we can say that that is the theory, or that is the transcendental philosophy. And you may remember when we discussed text 3, then we mentioned that Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha, he said that texts 30 and 31 are examples of these mantras. And the idea is that each mantra embodies a pastime. But here we see in the description given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in the purport of text 31, he says that text 30 is discussing the eternal beautiful form of Govinda, and text 31 is describing or referring to his pastimes. So when Jiva Goswami says that each mantra embodies a pastime, it doesn't necessarily mean that you get a mantra which is talking about, for argument's sake, Krishna stealing butter. Then you get another mantra and it's about Krishna stealing the gopis' clothes or something. That isn't necessarily what it means, but basically the idea is that each mantra focuses on a particular aspect of Krishna and his nature and his activities and his form like this. So these two mantras, 30 and 31, they are examples of these types of verses, and 29, as far as we can see, appears to be also. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, chose text 30 and I think text 32 for us to sing every morning in this way. And then, of course, we chant the different Gayatri mantras, those of us who are twice initiated, three times a day. In this way, Srila Prabhupada is actually engaging us in this process of this mantra meditation, but in a very scientific way, extremely scientific, all in the context of the chanting of Hare Krishna, all in the context of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And in this way, it can all become real. Can just imagine if somehow we stumbled across this information and then we concluded, yes, I must now chant that Gayatri mantra, Klim Krishna Govindaya Gopijana Vallabhaya Swaha, and maybe these two texts from Brahma Samhita, and that will be my program. Well, I don't think we would get very far. Even though these are very important mantras, extremely important, I don't think we'd get very far. Because in order for it to work, it's one thing for someone like Lord Brahma, but we're not on the level of Lord Brahma by any means. So it's one thing for someone like him to just meditate on these mantras and perhaps on the yantra also. But for us, Lord Chaitanya, and particularly Srila Prabhupada on behalf of Lord Chaitanya, has given us this whole scientific way of life so that eventually we can come to the point of chanting these mantras, but in such a way that it can become real and not that eventually, you know, because there's not enough supportive activity in our program, then eventually we might give up chanting the mantras. So Srila Prabhupada's very expert like that, and our acharyas, in taking these very important and very traditional parts of Vedic culture and Gaudiya Vaishnav culture, and weaving them together into a whole way of life which can actually make all these things real. So, text 29. It's interesting that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, the first thing he mentions, or the way he translates the verse at least, the first thing he mentions is the cows. Actually, they don't come. Lord Brahma didn't mention them first. He mentioned the Chintamani. But it is interesting that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta chose to mention the cows, because Govinda as we discussed on the first or second day, Govinda, this name, which Lord Brahma has this particular fascination with. Govinda means Krishna, who's first of all Lord of the cows. And then he's next Lord of the devotees. So he is tending the cows. And those are not ordinary cows, those are Surabhi cows. And those cows are very dear to Krishna. I don't know if you've heard the story that Jiva Goswami describes in Gopal Champu of when Krishna was present here on this planet. And Krishna had just turned 3. And Krishna decided at the ripe old age of 3 that he was ready to herd the cows. And nothing could stop him. Mother Yashoda tried to stop him. She couldn't stop him. He just had to herd the cows. And you can imagine little 3-year-old Krishna herding the big cows. Anyway, Nanda Maharaj suggested, why don't you try the calves for starters? So that was the agreement. Krishna would go out herding the calves with all his cowherd boyfriends, and seeing they are a cowherd family, it was a very special event. So they had a festival. Krishna's first day herding the calves. They had a festival. Yes, it's very glorious and joyful, jolly occasion. So nice that our dear little boy Krishna at the age of 3, he is taking up our family occupation. It's not just occupation, but dharma. Dharma, of course, indicates occupation, but it indicates occupation in the sense of religious occupation like that, religious duty. So everyone, because it was such a big occasion, everyone came and gave Krishna presents. Someone gave him a buffalo horn so he could hoot on it to catch the attention of the cows or the calves. Someone gave him a rope so if one calf got out of line, he could tie it and, you know, keep it under control. Someone, and Krishna at that time was given his first flute. He was given his first flute. And Mother Yashoda, her idea was to give Krishna one of these little pairs of these colorful, sort of ethnic little shoes. If you know what I mean. The type with the pointy toe that turns up. And in those days they had jewels on them, sort of multicolored, very, you know, very bright looking. Nowadays, of course, they have mirrors on them sometimes and not really so special, but anyway, what are they called? Those little shoes? They have a name. What are they called? They're very popular in Rajasthan. Huh? Puri, Jodhpuri. Oh, I see, Jodhpur. Anyway, I've heard they have some other name. Huh? Gorapuri. Kolapuri. Okay. So Mother Yashoda wanted to give Krishna. In fact, she gave Krishna a pair of those shoes. And she gave him a colorful, bright little umbrella. Multicolored. With gems. And even a servant to hold it. But Krishna, he'd accepted everything that everyone had given him so far. But when she gave these shoes and the umbrella with the servant to carry it, Krishna refused. Well, he didn't refuse initially. Krishna said, I will only accept this. I will only accept these things if you give me 4 shoes for each calf and 1 servant with an umbrella for each calf. There were 900,000 calves, of course, that would have meant 3,600,000 shoes and so many umbrellas and servants. And Krishna said, I will only accept these things if you provide them for the calves, otherwise, no, nahi, I will not accept them. I will not accept them. And Mother Yashoda protested that, don't worry about the calves, they're just animals. They'll be okay. But Krishna said, no. Krishna then spoke one famous little sutra, Dharmo Rakshati Rakshataha. He who protects Dharma is protected by that Dharma. This is a very nice little sutra. It's a very complete little sutra. Dharmo Rakshati Rakshataha. Rakshati means he protects, he who protects. That person who protects Dharma, Rakshitaha, is protected by that Dharma. So there we have it. It's a self-sustaining process. You protect Dharma, Dharma protects you. You protect Dharma, Dharma protects you. You keep upholding the principles of Dharma in your life from day to day. And from day to day, that Dharma upholds you. So Krishna said, the cows are our Dharma. How can we take anything better than them? I will not take anything better. And he didn't take it. He refused. And actually, even nowadays, some places, if you go, you'll see the people are living in the house, and you walk out through the back of the house, and part of the house is the barn. And the cows are there. And in some places, the beds are there also for the humans. And the people go and sleep there at night. I don't know how common it is, but I've seen it. Is it common? In other words, the cows are living in the house, actually. So the cows are very dear to Krishna. And they're Surabhi cows. They can give oceans of milk. They can actually give anything. This is one of the extraordinary features of Goloka, that just about everything can give anything. The cows can give anything. The trees can give anything. The ground is Chintamani, can give anything. Yes. So you might wonder, why are the inhabitants of Vrindavan not living in, you know, some extremely extravagant lifestyle with, you know, just vast palaces and mansions and, you know, extremely expensive clothes and covered from head to foot in gold and jewelry and all that. Why are they just living like cowherd people? That's because even though these cows and Chintamani and these wish-fulfilling trees, even though just about everything can give just about anything, but they only want to serve Krishna. So they don't pray for the latest Ferrari or Rolls Royce or even flower aeroplane. They just pray to serve Krishna, and they get facility to serve Krishna. So and because of this, they're just unlimitedly serving Krishna. The service they render to Krishna is so nice, so wonderful. And even they maintain, in many ways they maintain very simple way of life. Very simple. You may have heard there's a story about how Kamsa
once came into Vrindavan, normally stayed in Mathura and sent the demons to kill Krishna. But one time Kamsa came into Vrindavan to try and find Krishna himself. But Kamsa, when he entered Vrindavan, who should he meet first but Purnamasi? And she is the supreme goddess of the spiritual potency and overseeing all the pastimes in Vrindavan and protecting Vrindavan.